Hey Zed Heads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Lucy.
And this is a special bonus episode of The Cast of Us.
That is right. We're republishing the reviews Eric and Jason did of The Last of Us game way back in 2013, which is 10 freaking years ago
now.
I know,
that's insane. Oh man, that's episode 107 and 108. As you know, we're now on episode 5,432, so it's quite a while back.
it's been a minute.
So in this episode, you're going to hear, we did a quick, like mildly spoilery 8-minute review. And then we were like, nah, let's come back and do a longer one. So then I'm putting both here. The second one is a longer spoiler filled 1-hour review. So if you Amazing. Haven't played the games and you want to remain spoiler free for the series, you could probably listen to that first quick 8-minute one. But definitely don't listen to the second one because we talk about the ending of the game and everything about the game.
Okay.
We also did a podcast on The Last of Us Part 2, but I'm going to wait to put that out because, you know, I'll probably just wait until the TV show gets around to that part of the story and then I'll republish that too.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of people asking in the Zed Heads group might be good to answer. The show is only going to be covering the first game. Is that right? In this first season?
We don't. No, for sure. We actually talked about that last week in the second half of the podcast. I think the first season will basically cover the first game, but Ben thinks that the first season will cover only part of the first game and they'll take more than one season to cover it. But there are some things in the trailer that look like take place towards the end of the game, which is why I think the first season will actually cover the whole first game. So we'll see. I mean, I don't care either way. We're all on board for whatever they want to do.
Absolutely.
But we don't think they're going to get into the second game yet. Yeah, no way.
Cool.
So, all that said, well, I just do want to let you know, if you're getting into the whole Last of Us thing right now and you've played the games and you do want to hear our review on part two, even though I'm not republishing it, it's still in the feed. It's back in episode 397. So if you want to go back and listen to that, it's there.
Excellent.
And before we get, before I start playing the replay of our reviews, we did get a couple of emails from you guys. So we'll go through those. Now, before we read the emails, I wanted to mention we have about 10 days or so before The Last of Us premieres on HBO. Woo! And we need some like snarls, clicks, screams, and roars and things like that to change this listener feedback opener so it sounds like The Infected and not walkers on Walking Dead. Or actually, those don't even sound like walkers. They're just like people doing their zombie sounds. Anyways, we want it to sound like The Last of Us. So please record yours and send it to us at talk@podcastica.com. This is your chance. If only a few people send in their sounds, then by default, you are the ones who are going to be immortalized on our podcast for years. Whenever we do the listener feedback segment, it's going to be you clicking and snarling. I hope we, now's your chance. I hope we get a good representation of the different types of infected. So I would go look on YouTube for like Last of Us, you know, zombie sounds or infected sounds. You'll get a good representation if you can't remember. And send it to talk@podcastica.com. I hope people send them in so I can make this before the first episode. It'd be really awesome and you'll be on there forever. So thanks guys. Can't wait to hear.
Amazing. Oh, they're so upsetting. I still got that file on my computer. I'm like, why?
Your reaction to that was so great. What the fuck?
What the fuck? What am I listening to? Why? I then played it to Peter, who had exactly the same reaction, which amazing. I thought was quite funny. I was like, okay. Awesome. All right, so we have two emails, and the first is from Elena Lucero, who says, "Hi, Jason, Lucy. Well, I can't remember exactly when I started listening to this podcast. It was definitely when Karen was still co-hosting. I've not missed an episode since. Oh, the past weekend, I thought I'd give a listen to the first episode in 2010 just for fun, and I'm enjoying it so much that I've decided to listen to all of the episodes, even the ones I listened to over the past several years. Especially loving to hear how unfamiliar you guys were with the TV characters who didn't figure in the comic, i.e. the many references to Daryl. Who's the guy with the arrows? I think his name is Norman. Okay, can I just say, I would love it if they'd called Daryl Norman.
I think that might have been me. I was like, I think he's Norman.
Norman.
He does look like a Norman, I think.
And in the episode breaking down the season 1, episode 3, Tell It to the Frogs, Jason's friend Jamie, who said he hadn't read the comic, says something like, who's the guy wearing the police hat? Meaning Rick, of course. that's brilliant. I'll continue with you all as you transition to the cast of us. I've never played a video game in my life, but I'm so excited to watch the series. While I didn't need convincing to watch it, your recent episode with Lucy as the uninitiated potential viewer was such a great way to plant the hook. Thanks, Elena. Until then, I figured I'd watch just to be able to follow along with your new podcast, but now I'm even more excited to see what it's all about. Thanks as ever for producing such an immensely entertaining podcast. Can't wait for your coverage of The Last of Us and everything else horror. Happy New Year to all. Insert zombie sound here. Oh, also loving how on the first podcast episodes, you and Karen ended with don't get bit without listeners' names. So fun to hear the evolution of your engagement with your audience. Best, Elena. Oh.
Yeah, we said don't get bit for a long time, and then I think because I used to watch this old kids show called Romper Room, where they had what was called a magic mirror at the end. It looked like a magnifying glass, and the woman would hold it up looking at the camera and be like, I see Lisa and Susan and Mark. And I was always waiting for her to say Jason. And I don't think I ever heard her say Jason, but I wanted to give that effect to like one listener, you know, have them go, oh, what?
I love it. I've always thought that was great. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. And she said that she liked our episode introducing us to people to The Last of Us. I've gotten a lot of good feedback on that. On that episode we did last time, so I'm glad people liked it. We were so enthusiastic about it, you know.
No, I had a blast. I mean, I was only there for a little bit, but the bit I was there for, I loved. Obviously, I can't listen to the rest because I'm staying spoiler free, but I assume it was good.
Yeah, it was all good. Why don't you read the second one too, since people are just going to be hearing me for the rest of this podcast?
Yeah, sounds good. All right, so from Ross Meehan, hi all, hope you're well. Been a listener since season 9 of The Walking Dead and can't wait for your coverage of The Last of Us because they're my favourite games of all time. One of the reasons they're my favourite games is because of how accessible they are for disabled gamers. I have sight loss and The Last of Us is the only console game that I find to be totally accessible for me. Wow, that's really interesting, Ross.
It's incredible. Yeah.
Okay, that's really, really cool. Ross says Naughty Dog really went above and beyond what any other developer has ever done. Just thought that was worth mentioning, especially since one of the things that really frustrated me with The Walking Dead was the inaccessibility of the content. I wasn't able to find any version of the show with audio description, so had to rely on podcasts like yourselves and Talking Dead to fill the gaps most weeks. Oh, Ross, that sucks. But tell you what, Talking Dead, Chris and Jason would have you covered. They go through it moment by moment. But that sucks that it wasn't accessible to you in the same way. It really disappointed me towards the end of the show, especially for the last season. The AD wasn't available for a flagship show on Disney Plus. Yeah, well, yeah, Ross, I completely agree. Thankfully, audio description is something that virtually all flagship shows include these days, providing the platform supports it. Keep up the good work. Thanks, Ross. What a great email. I didn't know that Disney was lagging on that. That sucks, but I'm really sorry that's the case, Ross. I hope it gets better.
For the game, I don't know all the details of the accessibility options, but I know that they went above and beyond what other games, like Ross said, other games have done. You can set the contrast so that things just are glowing a certain color that you need to pay attention to. And there's, you know, like descriptions, and there's like the rumble feature of the controller can help with different things. And it's just like they really just went all out with it. And I thought that was really cool. And some players who don't have any accessibility needs like that just use the stuff anyway to help enhance the game or make it easier, you know?
Cool. One of the things I have to do a lot in my job is write alt text for image descriptions. Uh-huh. And I wish I was better at it. Like, if anyone knows any good resources for how to get good at that, because I am
interesting.
I go off on tangents. I bet. I'm not describing useful stuff. It's really hard thing to do. Like,
yeah,
but it's super important, and like, a lot of big companies.
In there or something.
Yeah, I'm like, it's like a whimsical scene of an ocean, but not an ocean. And I'm like, Lucy, they like people just want you to say it's a blue door. Like, it's not that hard, but it's so important. And so many things, like, you know, Twitter and so on, have these accessibility features that people just don't use or don't think about when they're doing things. And yeah, I think it's really important that we consider that. And I'm really glad, Ross, that this is the opposite experience of what Disney Plus were doing with Walking Dead. I'm getting from that, Ross, that you must be in the UK, because yeah, Walking Dead's Disney Plus over here on ITV now. So yeah, that's cool. Thank you for writing in.
Yeah, thanks, Ross, and everyone else. Thanks for writing in. Our next episode will be on The Last of Us Season 1, Episode 1.
Dun, dun, dun. If anyone listening wants to write in or leave us a voice message for The Last of Us, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
Yeah, please write in about that. We want the same level of engagement from you guys. We love the back and forth. We want to know what you think about the show, whether you agree or disagree with us, if there's something we missed, all that good stuff. And now, here is me and Eric talking about the original Last of Us game right after we first played it back in 2013.
Time 10 travel years noises. Ago. Doctor Who TARDIS noises.
Let's move along. So we've got In the Flesh and Last of Us. Let's do Last of Us. Okay. So Last of Us is this game that got announced, I think, a couple of years ago, and it's by the same studio that does one of the most popular PS3 games called Drake's Fortune. And
Uncharted.
It's Last of Us. Yeah, Uncharted. It's called Last of Us, and Eric and I both played it. You finished it. I'm about halfway through. I love it.
Oh, it's
one of my favorite games ever.
It is now... absolutely. It's hard to say absolutely. I've been debating whether this is my favorite game that I've played, period, or not, if not in the top two or three. This game is an absolute masterpiece, hands down. Emotionally gripping from the moment you start playing.
The thing about these games, I think Uncharted 2, although I haven't played those, is you play a guy, and this game more than any other game, first of all, it's beautiful, but it looks, feels like you're in the real world, and everything you do, it's so natural, your movement. You come to a ladder, you crawl up it, the way you move around, kind of, you're with this girl that you're watching over, Ellie. She's 13 years old. And if she's mad at you, she sulks and she'll stay a little farther away. I mean, it's so natural, you know, the breathing, the emotion on the face.
That's great.
Oh, well, you walk by something and your hand will brush across it.
Yeah.
And you get this, and I felt this way about Uncharted as well, where he's walking and you get this sense that you're in a real space, that you are actually
You jump
there.
Up on a bar and you hear the bottles clink off.
Yeah.
And it's set in the, you don't think zombies, but the infected apocalypse. And you're going around in all these like old, it's like 20 years into it. So old hotels with moss growing over and like a whole section of the wall missing, but a lot of this stuff is still there, you know.
The basic idea is that it's the entire population has been infected with a fungus, the cordyceps fungus, which is a real fungus that infects ants. And that's the one when people hear about the zombie ants that it takes over their brain and does it. This has now gone over to humans, and you have different levels of infection. You have the recently infected who are like runners, and that would be more akin to your 28 days later zombie. And then you get the clickers. Now the clickers are blind because they've been so infected, their faces are mutilated and you can't even see
their
eyes.
Crusted over.
And they're covered with this fungus, and they make this horrible clicking noise. And after playing it for a couple of days, I ended up sick at the beginning of the week, and I had a massive fever going on.
And he started clicking.
No, unfortunately, in the middle of Sunday, Monday night, I had some of the most horrible fever dreams you could imagine, where in my dreams, I was Joel, and I am having a... And here's the great thing with this game, is that there are moments where you simply have to crouch and wait for these blind creatures to move just past you. And once you can get behind them, you can creep up on them real slowly. If you make a noise, they're going to hear you. One bite, boom, you're dead. You get up to them, you have to shiv them. They make these horrible noises, and you're just, it's creepy because I've never really played a game where you have to just be patient and allow these things to pass through.
I've been having a lot of trouble with this game. I feel like it's pretty hard. And I think I just realized why, because I didn't know they were blind.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't know they were checked as a noise.
Yeah.
And I didn't know you could do what you just said.
Oh, you have to. The clicker.
I knew about the shiv, but I thought.
You need a shiv on those.
I didn't realize if they couldn't see you that you could just be quiet.
And I'm going to jump off the podcast and go play right now.
No, it's an absolutely horrifying game. There are moments. Really cool. At one point, me and my older daughter were playing, and Mrs. Blog walked by and looked at us and said, "You guys look horrified."
Yeah.
And both of us were really like, emotional.
You see like all these cities and the buildings crashed together.
And it's 20 years after the outbreak.
Yeah.
So nature has taken over a lot of the cities, and you get to see Boston and Pittsburgh and Salt Lake City and a whole number of other places. But it's
the voice acting is really, really good.
Is it like World War Z where there's still electrical power everywhere and all the cell phones work?
Oh, no.
Sorry.
No, not.
Although you do have a flashlight that never goes out.
That's a satellite phone. Yeah. You do have a flashlight.
And occasionally it'll blink and you shake your controller.
I have a question. What platform is it on?
PS3 only. PlayStation. Yeah, okay. It's an exclusive.
But it's also, the thing about it, it's not just about these zombies. And I say nominally zombies because they're just infected with the disease, but it's also, you have the government that's also after you. You have groups of hunters. You have groups of cannibals.
Yeah, you have a lot other of bad factions guys that you have to take care of.
And so you actually have human things as well. The AI on this game is so amazing that
that's artificial intelligence.
That the bad guys will respond in ways I've never seen in another game. If they see one of their men down, they'll actually go, "Wait, he's down." They'll call other people over. If you start doing better in the game, they'll run tail. They'll take off. Not the zombies, but the humans. So if you're doing worse, they'll charge on you. You start doing better, they run.
That's great.
And you have to then chase them down. There are elements to this game I've never seen in any other game. And the main one for me was this amazing emotional impact where I finished, so I'm not going to spoil anything. But there were at least 3 to 4 moments where I straight up cried. I've got my 10-year-old next to me going, "Really? Are you serious?" But it's so emotional.
He's 10-year-old girl, by the way.
I'm only halfway through, but I was trying to think about whether I like this game better than the Walking Dead Telltale game. And it's hard to say because they're so different.
Yeah.
I think I like this game better, but there are some things about the Telltale game because it's more of a storytelling game even the Telltale game. This one, you're doing a lot of going into a new area, killing all the people or the zombies, and then going to another area. And so it's kind of the same thing over and over again. That's like my one. I just want to say this one thing. Sometimes in life I feel like, what if I had a time machine and I could just go back 10 seconds and do that over again a different way? How would things turn out differently? And in this game, when you die, you go back a few seconds and you get to try again. And then you kind of build up the skill to pass that situation.
Oh, that's
so
great.
So I feel like, you never just completely die out.
That's nice.
And I feel like, if you like, when I make it through a whole area, I feel like I totally cheated that. I have this little 10-second time machine, or else I never would have made it through a lot. Because you see yourself die over and over again.
And you can go in the stats and you can see how many times you died versus how many kills and all that kind of. Mine was up to 100 and something, is the number of times I died. And
who's the company that made it? Sorry.
Naughty Dog.
Naughty Dog.
And they are owned by Sony, which is why they only produce PlayStation exclusives, which is why the Uncharted series is only for PlayStation. Also, they did Crash Bandicoot as well.
Oh.
Do you know where they're located? Where they're headquartered?
No.
Cool.
So I give this totally enthusiastic thumbs up.
Oh, to any gaming fan or zombie fan, this is the game.
You know a gamer and you just like watching, then ask them to play it so
and
you
it's,
can watch it.
This is really this current generation's gaming console swan song for PlayStation.
Yeah, because they just announced the PS4 is coming this fall. So this is like the pinnacle of PlayStation
this, and
3.
From what I've played, this is the best of the best.
People say they like it better than Uncharted even.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Can you buy PlayStations right now real cheap?
Yeah.
I think so.
Usually.
I think we might have to buy an old PlayStation 3.
You should, I'll play this game for you.
You got that recorded, right? Karen saying that. That was for the world to hear.
Log and I both played Last of Us and loved it so much, and I figured, let's do another episode. I want to talk about Last of Us.
Well, I think we spoke a lot about it in the last episode, and we both had so much more we wanted to say once it was actually
finished.
And I finished it, finally.
And that intro music, by the way, was some spooky Last of Us music. And you pointed out that it's going to be a narrow cast because it's first of all, we're a zombie cast, and this is about a zombie game that is only on the PlayStation, and we're going to give tons of spoilers. So it's either for people who've only played it or who don't care about spoilers. But hey, it's a free bonus episode. On that note, let's move along.
Attention, shoppers. Deadcast Top 5 in 5, 4, 3, 2.
It's the Deadcast Top 5 this episode. It's Top 5 highlights of the excellent video game Last of Us, The Last of Us. A big warning, if you haven't played through the game and you don't want to be spoiled, then don't listen. But if you don't care about spoilers...
If you don't want to be spoiled, listen to episode 107, where we talk about The Last of Us. If you do want to be spoiled, go for
this
it.
Is, yeah. All, this is no holds barred. In fact, I'm going to talk about what happens at the very end of the game. So if you don't want to hear that, then you probably should skip to the next section where we spoil Walking Dead 400 Days. No, that one's just going to have light to no spoilers, actually. Anyway, so I give this game 5 GAX, highest rating possible.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolute 5 GAX. There's no question of that. 5 brains to take Karen's place. It was, and it's funny, I guess Metacritic or whoever it is, it's pretty much 95% on Metacritic. And I look through there to see, okay, who's giving it something lower, you know? Uh-huh. And it was just this string of 100s.
And GameSpot.
Some 95s. GameSpot gave it like 80. Yeah, an 80. And then there's one on there.
I'm surprised.
Well, they changed. Metacritic always puts it in the hundreds, right? And then one reviewer gave it a 7.5. And I read through that review in particular because I'm like, okay, who's giving this game a 7.5? Uh-huh. And it was basically somebody who's like, well, it was awfully violent and bloody. I didn't like, but it was a great story and all these kinds of things. So it was actually a glowing review, but it was just too much swearing and too much. So I'm like, okay, that's the thing. With this game, it's hard to recommend it to everybody. Mm-hmm. Because it is really violent. It is scary. The language is terrible. The mood is just very dark and oppressive.
It's so realistic looking that it makes the violent and violence even more shocking.
Yeah.
And one thing, you know, this isn't actually in my top 5, maybe it's in yours, but I wanted to mention that the violence, it feels like this game actually wants you to consider the impact of having to turn violent in a situation like this rather than just being... Most games where you're just like, here's a gun, shoot people. Don't think about it. I don't know. Yeah, it felt like that. And there was a scene that you and I talked about before where you just get so used to shooting pretty much everyone you see because hardly anyone's your friend. And then you're going at the end to save Ellie from these doctors who are this girl in the game. Your instinct is to just kill them all, which I did. And I realized right before I was about to kill the last one. And she said, you're a monster.
That
they don't have any weapons and they're harmless. Well, I felt so bad.
I paused on that third person. I was going to get into this later, of course, but since we're on the ending, we'll just briefly talk about it.
Impactful.
It took me a while to get through all of those fireflies to get to the surgical room. I was already to the operating room.
Of course.
It was hard. It was difficult. I was getting pissed. I was getting angry. And I was already angry to begin with. I had, as I was just mentioning to you before, I had played up until about 3 days worth, up until the point with the sniper in the house. And then the last day I played, I went from that point with the sniper where you have Henry and Sam still with you all the way to the end in one push. I was emotionally invested several hours. I was into this.
This is an intense game.
And by the time I reach that point where I'm heading towards the operating room and I'm getting through all those fireflies, and it's just so frustrating. And I was just on my last little bit of health. I had absolutely no med kits. I had no supplies anymore. There was red flashing along the whole border. I was almost dead. And when I walked into that operating room and I see that surgeon pull out the scalpel, I shot him immediately, shot the second nurse, heard the third nurse calling me a monster, and she was cowering on the ground with her hands up like this. And you know, and I pause, and I have my 10-year-old daughter looking at me as I'm doing this. And I was thinking, wait, I don't need to kill. I was so fucking angry, though, at this point. I'm like, you guys are going to kill Ellie. No. You know? And I just shot her right in the head. And I felt horrible. At that point, I'm like, oh, I am a monster. Yeah, I am a monster. Oh, God, it just got me.
You were with Maggie?
I was with Maggie.
Did she say anything?
Yeah. No, she was definitely like, Daddy, wow. And I was like, but they were going to kill her.
The game did it on purpose. I think they engineered that so we would have this same, because I had a similar experience.
But then you went back, right?
So then, yeah, if you get, this is the only time I've ever done this in the game, but you can at any time go back to the menu and say, restart this segment.
Restart encounter.
Yeah, encounter. And it took me back to where I'd already killed one doctor.
Okay.
So maybe, I don't know, maybe you do have to kill him, the one with the scalpel.
I've after playing it and not having anybody to talk to about it, I went through Reddit to see, and apparently you have to kill the guy with the scalpel.
You do, okay.
But you can leave the two nurses
alone. I did, because then I left the other two, and they just cowered the whole time. And I thought, oh, if it would have let me go back and before I killed the first guy, but now I know.
I understand if you try to grab her without killing the doctor, you can't do it. You just can't grab her.
Oh, okay.
So you have to kill him.
Okay.
And he's wielding a scalpel, so you know.
Yeah, and he's about to cut into her. I mean, for people who are listening to us because you don't think you'll ever play the game and you just want to hear, just briefly, you're a guy named Joel in this game, and you have a daughter. And when the zombie apocalypse breaks out, you're actually playing as the daughter at first.
Yeah.
And then chaos breaks out, and you and your brother and your daughter go downtown, and you get into an accident, and you're running and running. And then these soldiers come and they kill the daughter.
Oh.
And so it's like first few minutes of the game, you're playing this girl, and then she's dead.
Yeah.
And then it skips to 20 years later. You're firmly into the zombie apocalypse. Joel's beard has turned gray.
He's probably late 40s, early 50s. Yeah. And you find out like he was a teenager when he had Sarah, his daughter.
He's a harder guy in some ways.
Just to get into the detail of this game and that opening scene of what is probably near Austin, Texas. They're in Texas at the beginning.
They have Texas accents,
and there are little things like you realize he's in construction. There are books in his room about construction. At his nightstand is a book about starting your own business in construction. He's got a white truck out in front. I mean, so all these little
details
things about
are
little
amazing
details.
In this game.
He's a single dad. He's obviously very supportive of his daughter, because you see all these like pictures of him with her soccer game or pictures of them hiking. So they put in all these little details into the game that you may or may not even notice. But it's fully realized. I mean, that's the most amazing thing about it.
And what I love is it opens with her giving him a birthday present, and it's a watch. Mm-hmm. And you expect him to, you know, be touched by it. And he is, but he just gives her shit. He pretends it doesn't work. And he doesn't thank her. And she punches him on the shoulder. And he doesn't, you know, that's what I love is like, a lesser writer would have written something more sappy.
Yeah.
But you get the implication that he loves this girl more than anything.
Oh, yeah.
Without the sappiness that we rarely do in real life, you know,
throughout the entire game. I mean, at no point do you ever feel there's any actual exposition where somebody's standing there explaining to you what's going on and how it's going. It just feels so natural the whole way through.
Well, let's get into our
top
fives. You go first.
Okay. My number five.
Oh, wait, one more thing. Before we go, and then just briefly. So then later you end up meeting up with this young girl 20 years later named Ellie, and you are tasked with taking her somewhere because she may have a cure because she got bit, but she's not turning. She's not being infected. And so, but you can tell Joel doesn't really want to get close to her. And then it's just the story of their, you know, journey and how they do end up getting close together. Of course, it's a simple story, But
for me, I don't know. With a two daughters myself and one right. who specifically is almost 11 and yeah. his daughter is like 13 or 14, Ellie's 14. To say that I felt a certain relation to all of that is an understatement. and unlike The Walking Dead or any of these other things that we've been talking about, you know, it's one thing to read something or to watch something, but with this game, when you're playing as somebody, I felt the emotional weight of everything the whole way through, and his connection or lack of connection with Ellie for a while was okay, let's get on with the top
There's
five
a segment
here.
In the Walking Dead 400 game where I felt like that too. We'll get to it then, but it's where you have to make a similar decision that we've seen people have to make in the show, but I felt maybe slightly different because it's more immediate. And I'm like, oh, maybe if I was in that position, I might make a different decision. Mm-hmm. I'll talk about that later. Let's get into the top
five. Okay, number five. Actually, this is kind of funny because this is a repeat of what David said in the last episode about Game of Thrones. My number five is moral ambiguity. We never really know at any time. I mean, is Joel a good or a bad guy?
There's hints that he's not a great guy.
No, he actually...
He says he's killed innocent people.
He does certain things right in the beginning of the game, after the outbreak, where he's torturing a guy to get information. Yeah, that's later
plenty
on.
Of that.
But
he's a little more violent than maybe you think he needs to be.
Absolutely.
But maybe not.
Maybe not. Maybe in this world, that's just how you survive. But at the same time, he doesn't like Ellie at first. He doesn't want to do this. He has a problem with his brother. He has a problem with all of these people. Even with Tess, they had a relationship and no longer do, even though they're still partners.
I mean, yeah, it's weird because he seems like a good guy, just his vibe.
Yeah.
But the thing that I thought the most was when they were driving, they got a car and they were driving and somebody jumped out and said, "Oh, I'm hurt." And he's like, "No, don't fall for it." And it was an ambush.
Yeah.
And then he told her, Ellie, that he'd been on the other side of that. That's how he knew. How do you know? Cause I've been on the other side of it. And then there was something about him having killed innocent people. So
It comes up a lot. Yeah. I mean, it throws that in there. Same thing with the fireflies. Are they good or are they bad?
Right.
I mean, even the way we view the cannibals or the hunters, however you want to call them, at first there is a good quality to them, which then turns very dark very quickly, you know? So throughout the whole game, you just never know. And who can you trust? Who can you not trust? Even when you get to Henry and Sam, there's a certain trepidation that occurs there. And you
which
just
is
don't
fun
know.
To play because it's so tense.
Exactly. And that just, I love that. And the fact that you're playing this guy that you don't know if he is good or bad. I'm playing him thinking, okay, this is me. So of course he's good. But then you see him doing horrible, horrible things. And
wait, you thought he was good because it was you? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, and one of the things I liked, and this gets into some other things, but throughout the whole thing, Ellie is the one with the most foul mouth, which cracks me up. And Joel.
She's great.
And there are a number of times where Joel will do something so brutally violent, usually pounding somebody's face into a wall or bashing their head with a brick. And all of a sudden, Ellie will kick in with a, "Jesus Christ, Joel, what the fuck?"
Yeah.
That just added to that. And it added to the sense of like.
Because you're sort of feeling like, wow, that was extra brutal. And then she says it.
And then she says it. And I'm like, God, that really was brutal. You know? And yes, there's a certain joy you get when you get that brutal.
Totally.
it's a cathartic sort of experience. Right. So I love that moral ambiguity that the whole game has. who's good, who's bad? What does that even mean in an apocalypse?
Mm-hmm. You know. Cool. Well, my number five is just the variation in different types of scenes and also tones. I mean, there's so many. It's all this decaying world, but there's old, beautiful hotels with part of the wall missing and the sun shining through and like vegetation. There's dirty, dank sewers. There's my favorite was when Ellie is alone with just her bow and it's a snowy forest and she's chasing a deer to hunt it and it's real quiet. And then there's really scary scenes. And there's also just like you're running for your life and tons of men are chasing you versus, you know, I don't know. I love how they varied the pacing.
I never felt like anything ever repeated.
Yeah. Nothing. Yeah.
Even though there, it is a series of fight this group of people, move on, fight this group, go to another room, fight. Every one of those encounters felt unique.
Different. Yeah. Every single one. I guess if I had any complaint about this game, having just, you know, played fairly recently, Telltale's Walking Dead game. That game, I felt more like I was always in a story. And in this game, I did feel like sometimes, okay, I'm on a playing field and my goal is to, I mean, it was different setups and you're right. And they did that masterfully. And I don't know how they could do this type of game any better than they did it, you know, but
it's anyway, the nature of the beast. I mean, there are certain things you just have to do.
And it was fun, but it the game got so tense that I was glad for a respite every once in a while where you're walking through a sunlit area and you actually are safe and they still go to the trouble of rendering the details of everything. And your job is basically just to admire it and maybe look for some supplies.
Well, there's a scene where she's talking about how she's never walked in the woods. And he's then going on about he and Sarah had walked in the woods a lot. And then you see this egret take off from a little pool of water. And it was just like, I'm just sitting there going, this is freaking gorgeous. This is ridiculous. How can this be the apocalypse? You know, if every apocalypse looked this nice, it would be great.
Well, I love when they see the city and it's overrun with vegetation and there's two buildings that are leaning against each other off in the distance. The graphics are probably the best of any game I've ever seen. I mean, there's going to be a lot of that. What do you call it when it's the best? Superlatives when talking about this game.
It's going to be a lot of hyperbolic discussions here. I mean, and that's what, 512 megabytes of RAM in a PS3, and they're getting graphics and they're getting all, I mean, I understand.
Wait for the PS4.
I don't know if you, I could hear my PS3 just, it was working overtime.
Mine said,
you know?
Help me at
one
point.
Pretty much.
Turn me off.
Oh, it definitely said that on my last day. I was just wide eyed and probably bloodshot, you know?
All right. Go into your next
one. My number four is actually atmosphere and environment. Saying, you know, just the same thing you were saying. They managed to give you this atmosphere that is overwhelming at times. Specifically for me, where some of those rooms where you're having to get through and it's completely dark and you have the gas mask on and you can't see because of all the spores everywhere. And you're using your flashlight and you have to occasionally rock your controller to get the batteries to keep working.
And the light is so beautifully done in this game.
It really is. And it was just the atmosphere that you get is just terrifying at times. It just felt overwhelming, and it's so strange to have that sort of feeling in a game or in any movie. Even it's hard. It's difficult for a movie to get you into that kind of headspace. And this game does it just so freaking well,
especially
over and over.
After one of these, the main like bad guy infected are called clickers, and they've just been infected for a long time. So their face and head is all hardened like a carapace or something.
It's all mushroomed up. And
if they get near you and you don't have a shiv and or the ability to shiv yet, they touch you and they just bite you and you're dead. And that's it. And it's really a gruesome death. And they bite into your throat and blood spurts out. Once you see that once, then your fear level amps up even more when you're in those
situations.
Did you
ever see the bloater death? I'm sure you saw bloater death where it grabs you by the eye sockets and then the jaw and just rips your head apart. But with the atmosphere and the environment also that, you can see the influences of how, what they used as influences for this game, The Walking Dead, 28 Days Later, Children of Men, Cormac McCarthy's The Road. And that's really apparent.
A big one. I never saw that. I have to see it.
The movies. Oh God, that's bleak. I'd recommend the book. The book is great. I mean, both are great, but I do love that book.
Oh, cool.
And then also No Country for Old Men. I understand that was because of the very spare music that they.
Well, you know what else from that is when I guess his name's Chigurh, Anton Chigurh.
Yeah.
He strangled a cop.
Yeah.
And he just walked up behind him quietly and then put a garrote or something, a chain around his neck, and then kind of fell backwards with the guy on top of him, and you hear this grunting, and it lasts a good minute or so.
And Joel does that.
And they really got that inspiration from that movie.
Well, then I guess there's a book, a historical fiction novel called City of Thieves by David Benioff, who's actually also a showrunner and writer on Game of Thrones. They use that, True Grit and The Road to Perdition, about a man who has lost his humanity and is redeemed by a young person that they're having to take care of.
I feel like that every day.
Tell me about it. So I loved it. That you see those influences and you feel that, and you feel you are part of something larger and real.
Yeah.
And that was the real takeaway.
Totally. My number four is music. I was going to play a couple. The music is not done by Bear McCreary.
And I had even originally thought it was by Michael Giacchino, but no, it's what's the guy's name?
He has a great last name. His name is Gustavo Santaolalla.
Yeah. And he's won two Academy Awards.
Oh, yeah? For what?
I forget. I did look it up the other day, and I completely forget.
In an interview, the creators of the game said that there is some scary music, but mostly they were going for emotion.
Yeah.
I'm just going to play bits from a few of the songs.
Did you get the GameStop pre-order of this? You actually get the soundtrack with so I have the soundtrack on my PS3, and I was cleaning up the other day and I just started playing it, and I realized this is some really depressing music to sit there.
It's very, it just evokes a lonely world. But yeah. Here, I'm going to play, this one's called Quarantine Zone.
Great.
This is The Last of Us. This is like the main,
I love this
theme. Yeah, let this go on a little bit longer.
And
go ahead.
No, I was saying this is where when I was making all comparisons to Red Dead Redemption, it was the music in particular,
almost like Western.
Yeah, yeah. But there are certain scenes, like in Red Dead Redemption, you're like riding down to Mexico and you hear some of this kind of music playing over the top.
It's kind of like it's drifting over the plane.
I love this piece. Yeah. Goosebumps.
I recommend. I have Ardio, so.
Okay.
I guess I hear anything I want. It's really cool. We should get them as a sponsor. yeah, I think that's all I'm going to play for now. But go online, and I'm sure they have some of this stuff on YouTube if you want to hear it, or you can buy it on iTunes, The Last of Us soundtrack.
It is very evocative. Yeah. I mean, the whole way you're playing. And it's great because I never felt like that Hans Zimmer sense of timpani drums pounding, and making you kind of, manipulating your emotions to a certain degree.
Yeah, it's subtle.
It's very subtle. It's there.
It hangs in the background for the most part. Yeah. It's spare.
But it
is Giacchino-like.
It is Giacchino-like, but it fills the spaces so well. Mm-hmm. And it's just
it varies a lot, too. I mean, there is a similar quality, but like that, go back and listen to the very beginning of this podcast. That was, part of the soundtrack too. And it's just scary as hell.
Yeah.
And then a lot of it's just kind of sad. Okay. That's my number four.
My number three, giraffes. that scene.
Yeah.
It was just perfect. I mean, after the events of what happened to Ellie with David and
she was really depressed because she just had to kill a perverted guy who was trying to kill her.
A rapist and, slash yeah. cannibal. Yeah, that guy
and
was just
she
creepy.
Just knifed him in the face with a lot of rage over and over again.
And now this was, and of course,
a young
after,
girl.
Right, a 14-year-old girl, yeah. right after having to save Joel's life because he had gotten gored with rebar. Taking care of herself in addition to taking care of him, getting captured by these assholes, having to sit there and watch somebody be cleaved for food, then right. almost raped. And just, again, one of these scenes of just like anger where you're just getting so angry. In the scene with Ellie trying to get past him with all the plates, when you're trying to hunt the guy down,
bad
David,
guy's
the
chasing
bad guy.
After you in this big restaurant.
You can understand her rage when she starts just taking a machete to the guy's face. Yeah, very Rick and Tomas like, except it was over and over and over and over again. Right. And then when Joel grabs her and stops her from that, I don't know if you caught this, that he then refers to her as baby girl.
Oh, I didn't catch it at that point. He did it again at the end.
He did it again at the end. But that, the only time he'd done that previous was with Sarah, his daughter.
His daughter, yeah.
And he had had a distance from Ellie up to this point. That I think was it was at it that really moment. Shifted, huh? Well, I'd say when he...
She took care of him. That was...
Well, when Joel decided not to leave her with Tommy, I think that was the big shift.
That's
but
right.
This one was the ultimate shift into, I love this kid. She's pretty much my daughter. So when... You see her suddenly in spring and she is depressed and hanging back. And, and you had made a point of in the last episode, we were talking about how when she's upset with him, she sulks and hangs back a little.
Now she's depressed.
Now she's really hanging back. And she's
there's all these scenes where you have to climb on top of something and you have to boost her up and then she can get find a ladder or something to help you get up. So you go over and you put your hands together for her to step in and then she's always right there to step in your hands. So you do that same action. You put your hands there and she's not there.
Yeah.
And you're like, Ellie. And you look over and she's just sitting on this bus bench with she's her head between her legs. And okay. Sorry.
Oh, and it hit me so hard. And I was just, I was getting bummed out.
Yeah,
I
mean, me
I
was, too.
So, I'm like,
and they're like,
on.
Is it worth going on? And I'm feeling like, yeah, this is getting
well. They, and here is an interesting point that also I think has to do with the end, which I think we'll talk a lot more about, was she makes a point of saying, when all this is over, what are we going to do? Uh-huh. She'll do whatever Joel wants. That does not sound like somebody who is expecting to die.
No.
You know, she's getting over the survivor's guilt and just so depressed. And they're starting to make plans for the future, which I thought was so cool. She's so bummed. And then all of a sudden they're walking through. Was it the hospital when they see the giraffes?
Some building.
I don't think it was the hospital yet, but they're in Salt Lake City. And all of a sudden she gets excited about something.
That
Joel,
she sees
come on,
outside
quick,
the window.
Come look. And I'm wondering, like, what the hell is this? Yeah. Is it, you know, do you see the fireflies? Do you see this? I did not expect to turn the corner and see a giant giraffe's head eating some leaves. And this is a point where she was so happy, and I felt this weird, just utter joy. I mean, I'd been playing for hours at this point. I was actually feeling depressed.
Yeah.
And these giraffes show up, and I just started crying. I mean, I'm sitting there, and even Maggie, again, my daughter's looking at me like, really? I'm just like, this is beautiful. There's so much joy here, you know? And I sat there and we watched that whole herd of giraffes just kind of moving around. I think I was probably standing there for about 10 minutes. And all I could think was, no, I want Ellie to enjoy this. I want her to see this. And I believed it. Like, no, I want Ellie to stand here and see this
too,
for as long as we can.
Because you can leave.
You can leave.
And then when I did finally leave, I'm like, was that too early? Should
I
have appreciated
exactly.
it a little bit more?
I had the same sense. And then I had to remind myself, what the hell am I doing? This is a video game. You know, it doesn't matter.
But they definitely do lead you down paths and you feel like, that was really effective because you're going through the same emotions at that point. And then you see that and it's like, okay, that was a little bit of brightness. I think that gave me what I need to finish this game.
It had been disappointment after disappointment after disappointment, you know, and to just have something. And to me, it became like this weird symbol of hope. You know, the cordyceps fungus hasn't affected everything.
And you're glad to see her have a little hope too, which I'm sure Joel would be after, you know, thinking, maybe she's kind of deadened now.
Yeah. And so my number three, simply giraffes. That's all I
heard. Okay, mine is difficulty level. A lot of games these days, games used to be hard, like Super Mario Brothers was pretty hard, and games have gotten easier and easier over time because the game makers don't want to frustrate people and have them stop playing the game. And this game is hard, and it's hard when a clicker comes up to you, it'll kill you in one bite, and the ammo's limited, and it's hard to, it takes skill to pull out the right gun or bomb or whatever and use it in just the right way, or decide whether to sneak up on somebody, and then, you know, more enemies approach, and you have to get really good with the controller.
And the fact that the whole way through, whether you're crafting something or switching weapons or any of these activities,
you can't
talk
pause.
About, it's not pause. It's all in real time.
They're still able to come after you.
Yeah.
And so you get skilled. And the best thing about the difficulty is some games in the old days used to be, if you did the wrong thing, you could die or get stuck and not be able to continue.
Yeah.
This game is not difficult in that way. If you die, you just get pushed back a few seconds or minutes, and then you try again, and then you build up the skill that it takes to get through. And it can be a little frustrating, but I'm glad it's that hard, because I went back to the beginning of the game and where it's easier, and I just brushed right through, and I felt so proud. I'm like, wow, gained some skill. Well, here,
I told you I was going to start replaying it. I haven't actually started replaying it.
But I just play the first, like, I don't know.
I'm going to bump 15, up the difficulty minutes. Level the next time I do. I've never replayed a game on hard or insanity or whatever. So I'm going to finally do that with this, because I feel like, okay, now I understand what to do, and it'll give myself another challenge.
I was showing my friend Rich, actually, and I had him start at the beginning, and he was fumbling around just like I did.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, let me see if I can do this. And I just went up stealthily, attacked guy number one, number two. And you know, I couldn't do anything like that when I first played through it. So anyway, it makes, not only is it satisfying to just kind of develop some skill playing a game, but it makes it more, scarier and more tense.
There's this great image I saw the other day. It had a compare and contrast thing. On the top was the image from Dead Rising with the dude standing in the mall, and there's just the whole Hordes mall is zombies. Full of zombies. And it says, you know, no problem, I got this. And then it shows a scene of Joel and two somethings out, you know, whether they're clickers or whatever. And it simply says, oh fuck, there's two of them. and that to me summed it up well. It's like so many other zombie games, I can take on a horde of zombies. In this game, two people is enough to make you shit bricks.
Yeah. And it's every enemy you need to take seriously.
Absolutely.
In this game.
Yeah.
I was playing it at normal level too, and at one point I died so many times that the game actually put up a message saying, you can switch to easy mode.
I got that.
Like, no,
I got that a few times.
I'm not gonna do it.
And I was, I had the same feeling. No, I'm not going to, I'm not that bad.
On the other hand, the puzzles, like, they're so natural, so they're great, but where you maybe can't figure out how to get,
a little raft
over something, or she can't swim, so you have to help her across and you have to find a raft. They're for the most part fairly easy to figure out, and if you don't figure out for a few minutes, it gives you a hint.
So you left the hints on. You can turn the hints off.
I was wondering about that, and I thought I should check and see if you can turn the hints off, but I never did, and maybe I should have, because that part felt a bit easy.
Anyway. You can turn the hints off. I thought about doing it as well, but then
I wanted to get through the game.
There was like a pallet underwater.
Yeah.
And I think if I did not have the hint on that, I would have been sitting there spinning my wheels for way too long.
I mean, I used to play these Infocom games where it's all text and you have to, it's really tough. And those are games where you can run into a dead end and you have to start all over unless you saved. But these days, it's just way too tempting to go on the internet and find the answers. It's impossible to play those games for me anymore.
I'm trying to remember what game. There was one game I did that fairly recently where I went and found.
Just to get you past
just
this
to get
one
past
point.
One little point.
And
I
when
so
I was
frustrated.
A kid, you didn't have that. And
no.
I just like go back a week later and have new insights and get through, or else just never solve the damn thing. Anyway, let's move to the next one.
All right, number two. Where's my number two here? The voice acting, which, and this goes into
superlative, the best ever.
It's incredible. And this gets into motion capture and on the secondary characters. I mean, yes, you have the two main characters of Joel and Ellie, and they are phenomenal. And the fact that those two, I don't know if everybody was motion captured, but I know Joel and Ellie, Troy Baker and Ashley Johnson, were motion captured for this, and it comes across. Everything feels so naturalistic, but the acting is just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And I did want to give some shout outs just for, like I said, Troy Baker, who plays Joel. He's also the protagonist in BioShock Infinite. He plays Robin and Harvey Dent in Batman Arkham City. He's going to be Joker in Batman Origins. He was Kai Leng in Mass Effect 3, apparently a role in Full Metal Alchemist. A lot of people love that. Ashley Johnson, Ellie, was the waitress in The Avengers. I don't know if you remember, though, the waitress in Manhattan, but she was there in the TV show The Killing. And then you've got Annie Wersching for Tess, Merle Dandridge, Marlene, W. Earl Brown, Bill, and Nolan North, who plays David, the creepy cannibal, is also Nathan Drake from the Uncharted series. Yeah. So I just wanted to say, just give them some props, because man, they were all incredible. And it's rare to even have a game where sure the main characters are good, but to have these secondary characters become just fully fleshed out and real. Bill, for instance, mm-hmm. man, I loved Bill. And did you find Frank and Frank's note?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was reading through that a lot of people, when they gave Bill the note from Frank, actually walked away.
What did it say? I can't remember.
It was just basically, you're a dick. You know, you should have stayed. You should have. It was just his suicide note. Uh-huh. But
these are people you never meet.
People you never meet. Frank, but he was obviously Bill's partner. They were lovers, and it was just an emotional thing. And I understand some people walked away from Bill to give him that moment alone with the letter, to not to not invade his privacy, right, you know. Right, and it's just, and even Ish, there it's a character you never do see,
right?
But Ish is somebody you can kind of follow what he's doing through these notes you find throughout the whole thing. So I mean, just incredible acting the whole way through. I can't even begin to say how incredible that was.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, there's some really bad voice acting in early games that have voice, like Resident Evil is notorious for being
pretty bad.
Really, really bad. Really bad. So bad it's good bad.
Yeah.
And then, you know, now like with Walking Dead, great voice acting.
Yeah.
Red Dead Redemption, really good. But I think this just beats them all.
It's just incredible. I have nothing else to say about it. It's so damn good. Oh, I will say one thing. You know, Ellen Page is actually pissed because I guess she's doing some motion capture work.
It looks
work.
Just like her. I mean, I thought that.
Everybody thought that. And her name is Ellie. And I guess she's doing her own motion capture voice work for another video game. So she's actually voiced.
It looks
she's,
really bad too, this game that she's doing.
Yeah, but she's mad that they've kind of used her image. So I understand before they released it, they changed Ellie a little bit so she looks a little more like Ashley Johnson.
It didn't work.
No, it didn't work.
I just
at all.
Kept thinking Ellen Page.
Of course it's Ellen Page. And actually last night Juno was on. We were watching Juno and Maggie's like, Daddy, look, Ellie. It's Ellie. Yeah. I'm like, no, not quite.
I don't blame her for being mad, but it really worked.
Yeah, it did. Actually, she should just say no, that's great. Yes,
yeah,
that's
it's
me.
It's a work of art, so let it go. Mm. My number two is the emotionality, and we've already kind of been talking about that. I mean, you can tell this game engages your emotions, and it has several moving moments, and it's very good with the pacing and the music and just combining all the elements to engage your emotions. But I think the thing that moved me the most was when Joel picked Ellie up off the operating table and he said something about, come on, baby girl. And I just like his transformation to the light side is complete, you know? So I was moved by that. right.
No, so damn emotional. It's amazing that this many weeks after having played the game, you bring up that scene. And again, boom, I get goosebumps. All these little points that we've been talking about. And it's just it felt so real to me. And I've never really immersed myself. I mean, I enjoy immersing myself into a game to a certain degree, whether it's Mass Effect or Red Dead Redemption. It's fun. These are adventures. You're having a good time. This one wasn't really a good time.
Yeah. It's a bit hard, actually. That might be another sort of complaint, although I wouldn't want to have not gone through it and I may play it again. But at times it's just like, God.
It weighs on your soul. Yeah, it's like, your soul take a beating. I'm just going to beat it up a little bit. And you're like, God. But
it's art.
It is art. And it's so weird to feel that immersed. And again, I think because of me having my daughter and that sense of connection between a father and a daughter just hit me so much harder, man.
But people, you know, I mean, we sound like total fanboys, and I know that some people who won't respond to this game, and I think I've read some comments where people are like, it's slow, and it's just kind of game for everyone. So
you know,
if you're a sociopath, you might.
No, I heard that from an 11-year-old boy who he plays all the Call of Duty and the Battlefields and all those. Those are the ones he likes. Little twitchy 11-year-old. Yeah, Twitch games. Mm-hmm. And I'm 41 years old. I don't have the synapses to play those Twitch games. I didn't even go into the multiplayer with this, which I want to, and I want to try it.
I haven't either.
But I just feel I'm going to fail. I've only played one game. I've only played one game multiplayer, and that was Mass Effect. And it took me a while. And then it took me a while to get over the fact that I had these 12-year-old kids yelling on their mics, such profanities, and I'm just wanting to yell at my, like, you young man, I'm getting my dad on, you know, and it's ridiculous.
Well, one time I was talking to Karen about games, and if you're listening, Karen, and you were, I think you were asking me, you know, if they were ever going to have a game, or maybe if they already did, where, you know, the characters really engage your emotions and stuff. And this one is more than probably any game I've played. Although The Walking Dead game comes pretty close.
And again, you got a man who needs to be redeemed. Who's redeemed by a little girl.
Yeah.
Who's protecting a little girl.
Iconic story. But anyways, I do think you should get that PlayStation for David. And if you're watching it, you'll get much the same effect. You don't
Are we on my number one?
We're on number one.
Okay. My number one, that ending. That ending and the impact that it had on me shows what good storytelling can do.
Specifically, what about it? The part about him saving her or him lying to her or...
All of it. The whole lead up. I mean, the moment you find out what they're... You know, the moment he gets knocked out after trying to save the everything in Salt Lake City with the fireflies. You think you've reached the goal. You've had this high moment and then brought down so quickly when you find out she's going to be killed and going into the surgery.
They're
going
to dissect her brain so they can find the cure.
Yeah. And he then tortures this guy to find out where she's at before killing him. And apparently you already know they already had some issues together. But what I'm getting is just the storytelling. The fact that you can get so emotionally attached to something, which is just a game, to me boils down to the story. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it was well-paced, it brought you from one point to many other points, not just point A to B. It was to B to C to D, and it built on itself over and over and
the
over.
The story
over
and the
again.
Presentation.
And the presentation.
Yeah. Combined together.
And just the brutality of Joel's actions and then his lie to Ellie. It was, and there at that end, once like what we've already talked about with the doctors, him saving Ellie, not knowing if she was alive or dead for a little moment.
Right.
Did Marlene shoot Joel? Did Joel shoot Marlene? And then that final lie, which I now understand may not be that much of a lie, because if you listen to all the recordings that the doctors were made as you went through there, they did say there were other people who were immune and that they couldn't get anything viable. That's actually, and they did have like a, it is somewhat, because they also said she was totally different.
Okay.
That the way it showed up in her brain, I think I'm assuming with an MRI, that it was different the way it was. So there still may have been hope for humanity with her, but maybe not. And
right. And he didn't want to.
And at that point,
paint
I
any
was,
picture that there would be any hope at all to her.
No,
he just wanted her to forget about it.
Yeah. And just the fact that, you know, that throughout the whole game, they kept saying that you need to have something to live for. And I think you get the idea that Joel didn't really have anything to live for anymore. No. Ellie was it. Ellie became what he's living for, and he couldn't allow a second daughter to die.
Yeah.
He just couldn't do it. And did it mean the fate of humanity? Yeah.
Maybe.
And is it selfish?
Most likely they would have dissected her brain.
And it wouldn't have worked.
Probably wouldn't have led to anything.
How would they have even distributed it? I mean, these guys are being killed left and right. There was like five fireflies left. I mean, it's just... I don't know. And I know this is a big point of debate for people, whether it was just selfish.
Right.
Yeah, it was selfish.
I mean,
and I'm okay
selfish,
with that.
Yeah. But also somewhat, well, he may have genuinely cared about her well-being independently of himself, but that's still at the expense potentially of humanity.
And you know, it forced me to even ask myself that question. What would I do? If it was my kid,
right? I'd probably save the kid. If I thought there was a really good, strong chance that she could save all of humanity, then I might talk it over with her. But with what they'd seen in that world,
and look at what humanity's become. Well, I mean, really, you want to save them? I don't know. You know, I don't know if I'd want to save.
Yeah, 20 years in, the people left are.
You know, Tommy seems like he's got a good setup in Wyoming with the dam his brother, and his wife, Maria. You know, that's a pretty good setup. Go live there, be happy. You can rebuild. And it seems like they're rebuilding.
Until part two.
Until part two.
Okay.
I hope they don't do, by the way.
They're talking about setting more games in this world, but they haven't decided whether they'll feature the same characters or just go different ways. You know,
different ways. I would like to see.
It might be interesting to go 20 more years and
an adult LA.
Yeah, that might be cool.
That could be cool. Yeah.
My number one is just the naturalness of the game. And as I was like trying to figure out exactly what that meant, I realized it's a huge topic, because naturalness infuses this game in the movement that they make. In most games, the characters have a discrete set of animations. They have a run animation, a walk animation, you know, maybe they have several, but in this game, you get the sense that in each setting, the game makers paid attention to what the mood and the context were and had them move accordingly, whether they were upset or scared or whatever, you know.
How tense was it when you finally get to play Joel after having played Ellie, and he's coming out of with the penicillin, he's coming out of the whole injury thing, and he can barely move, and you're having to move him around, and you feel injured. And oh God,
his vision's kind of blurry and stuff. Yeah, as you said, the voice acting's amazing. I think it's the best I've ever heard in a game. They do little bits of business, like, but while you're playing, it's not a cutscene. So, like, I think Ellie had just stabbed a zombie, and then a little later, as you're walking, you see her cleaning off her knife. Yeah. The lighting is very dynamic, and it shines off the dust motes, and you can't see, or sometimes it's beautiful. One of my favorite things is in most games you can carry a lot of weapons, but it's kind of a cheat. You don't do they go in your magic pockets, you know, when you switch? But in this game, he has a backpack on, and you actually see, like, he'll strap a big flamethrower to the back of it.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
You see the arrows, whatever he has. And then when you switch weapons, he actually pulls off the backpack and puts the, you know, takes the new weapon out of it. So it feels,
it certainly held a lot of weaponry in that it backpack, did. but
more than most games, they at least addressed it.
And what other game are you excited about getting a quarter of a rag? You know, ooh, I got a quarter of a rag. Yeah, I got half of a scissors, you know, it's like
to build things.
Yeah.
And I like that you don't, you only see what's called usually a heads-up display, like a graphic showing status or what weapon you're carrying or whatever. Only when you're changing weapons do you see that, or when you need to. And then it kind of fades away, and all you're left with is seeing Joel behind the shoulder and the game world.
No,
so it's realistic in that way. And like you mentioned before, you can't pause when you get a new item or you're building a Molotov cocktail or whatever.
And I love the fact that you have the ingredients are the exact same for the medical kit as the Molotov cocktail.
Yeah, so you have to decide whether you want to be violent or...
my recommendation to everybody
cocktail.
No, as many med kits as you can.
But if you get the Molotov cocktails and you die, you just get to start over again.
That's true.
I started thinking
and
about
that. Lots of shivs.
Yeah. I was thinking about... well, this game feels more like watching real people than with probably most any other game I've played. They have that thing called the Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
Heard of that? Mm-hmm. That's where the closer you get to looking real in these digital characters, there's this weird sense of unreality because they're so close to us. I didn't totally feel that.
I don't know
if we're just getting used to seeing characters like this. I think that's part of it, but they just looked really good. Well, they're really good at conveying emotions.
Well, what's funny is the Uncanny Valley usually occurs when there's something seems almost living with the eyes or something dead with it. I don't know which one it is, but there's something with the eyes.
Yeah.
And this one just seemed to nail it.
It did, huh?
Yeah.
Because those Zemeckis movies, I never saw them, but I saw the trailers and they looked like they had really dead eyes.
They creeped me
but
out.
But I didn't get that at all in this game, really.
I felt no deadness from it.
Okay, that's pretty much all I had to say about it. So that's definitely, I haven't really thought about it in detail, but I can probably pretty confidently say it's in one of my top three games of all
time. I've put it up somewhere in the top three, probably number one,
yeah,
along with Red Dead Redemption and Mass Effect. Those are the ones for me.
So. Pac-Man.
God, I actually miss Pac-Man. I've always loved Miss Pac-Man. The last game I bought on the Sega Genesis was Miss Pac-Man.
We should do it. Well, next episode, it'll be all about Miss Pac-Man.
Waka, 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 waka.
All right. Thanks for listening to that, you guys. That is our show, our bonus episode. Thank you.
Next episode, I'm still here. The next episode will be The Last of Us Series 1, Episode 1 on The Cast of Us.
Woohoo!
And this episode is made possible by Patreon supporters like Sarah Goodman, who've pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonCabassi. So thank you, Sarah. And why should we join Patreon, Jason? What's there?
Well, there's a lot of different perks, but I usually just mention one. And since this might be the first time people are hearing me talk about it, one of the best perks is, I mean, aside from feeling good about supporting the show and the work that goes into it, you get ad-free versions of each episode.
Excellent.
Enough to listen to those ads. All right. That is our show.
Thanks for listening. Don't get bit, Ross Meehan.